So welcome to Black Dragon podcast and interviews with interesting people. And I've got Theo Bennett here today, who's the principal of TechForce, a recruitment company specializing in high-level placement. Theo's a Kiwi, a coach of rugby, obviously, and an author. And he's just written a trilogy in the last couple of years, and he's about to launch his book Virtutis. So what we'll do first though is Theo, you're an interesting person, and give us a bit of an intro and tell us why you're interesting.
It's a big call, but mate, I've been involved in leadership development for professional athletes and veterans transitioning into new career pathways. And through that whole way of like coaching rugby, being involved with the military, all those things have organically led me to think about life quite differently and in different ways. And I've been kind of very, very grateful and to be involved with individuals that I've met in a high performance environment that have really, really shaped the way my life is and how I think about life. And adding to that as well is I've been heavily involved in jiu-jitsu in the last 10 years or so. And in that has really shaped how I look at the importance of what life is about. For some reason, being involved in it has definitely changed my perception about how what life is and the difference between people that live by a warrior code and then people that live day-to-day in life and kind of general population as such, if I can use that word.
So you mentioned a couple of times there about changes of perception. So let's start there. When you talk about, I have some empathy with what you're saying. I've been in some interesting environments, and I look at the person I was when I grew up in South London and who I am today, and I know how much my view of the world has changed, formed by experience. But share with us what it is, you know, it could get a bit granular on what's changed.
Well, as a rugby player, for example, we can use rugby as a standpoint for this because it's a mutual common ground, right? As a rugby player, I used to get away with so much because I could hide on the field with 15 or 14 other blokes running around. And I could always kind of get away with not really having all the responsibility in the world. And if you can imagine, before there was technical analysis and all this kind of stuff, probably you and I were running around on the field and the coach would tell us something and then we were like, okay. And we probably could have got away with a few things there and not taking full responsibility. When I moved into jiu-jitsu and then working in kind of like the modern era of rugby, things are way more accountable. And all of a sudden, I started changing more and more as that accountability started to grow. And two things happen. You either take that on or we stop doing what we do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think jiu-jitsu and rugby together in the modern era has really, really shaped and changed my perception. It's made me much more accountable in the things that I do.
No, that's quite interesting because after I stopped playing rugby, I really resonate with people hiding in the team. And if you look in the modern workplace today, I think the latest Gallup poll talks about in the US labor force engagements as low as 30%. So there's a lot of people hiding. But like you did jiu-jitsu, I went into Aikido in one of the first things I remember, and I had friends going to boxing, and that's a common theme. Like you go one-to-one in the ring, there's nowhere to hide. And I flipped out of Aikido. I didn't stay in it for long. I loved it, but I went into endurance, like running and triathlons and things like that, and in big endurance events. And there's you and yourself, isn't there? There's only you and yourself, and the only person you can reckon with is yourself. There really is nowhere to hide. So what were some of your discoveries about yourself when you embarked on that journey?
I think the biggest discovery of myself is how many excuses I used to make. And my brain was like really kind of messed up. It wasn't very clear, I don't think, about. Carlos Gracie said there's either winners There's no winners and losers. There's only winners and learners. And that the perception of winning at all costs all the time. Like, I think that was a big shift. It changed things within me. Like, it's like, I'm not out here just to win. I'm out here to be the fastest learner. And looking at the infinite game of life, the infinite development of myself, and just taking on that responsibility every single day, getting up and going to the mats. If I was sore and broken in one part and I couldn't really do what everybody else is doing, don't stop. Find something that you can do and do it. And it's even pushed over to my writing. When I'm not feeling creative, there's editing to do. And when there's not editing to do, there's research to do. There is always something to do.
Right. Yeah. That is interesting. You mentioned the game of life and how many people, and you mentioned like going out on the mat. And, you know, there's the buzz of, or the buzz phrase of resiliency. I've even heard people say, I hate resiliency, or the word, or whatever. But I think that is the human nature, isn't it? The path of least resistance. Okay. Why face the challenge when you can walk around the challenge?
Yeah, because I was faced with a point in my career where a lot of people respected me at the lower levels of rugby, that I could walk in anywhere and kind of gain this respect.
Right.
But when I was really honest with myself, I was like, well, am I really doing the best job that I could? And then I went into jiu-jitsu as well as coaching. And then all of a sudden, there was guys there that wanted to take my head off every single day. They didn't care who I was. And I was like, okay, if maybe if I can earn the respect of these people, then I'm going to come confront every single day with my training. Maybe I'll find a new respect for myself as well. Hmm. And it kind of shifted from, it's not just about resiliency. It's not just that. It's who you are. Like, when you become that,
yeah.
When you find something that you're totally passionate about, it is who you are.
Now that really resonates, the identification of yourself as a person and who you are as mm-hmm. a person. I think a lot of people run away from that most of their lives, don't they? They don't just ever discover who they are.
Yeah, exactly. And it's accepting like the almost the weakest parts of who you are, and then finding that voice that not necessarily pushes you through the barriers, but nurtures you through the barriers that you face. Like seeing the things that can go wrong, accepting the things that do go wrong, but being that voice of reason that goes, mate, it's all right, just get up and go again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it doesn't have to be a hard voice that I think everybody thinks is the way to go forward. It's not always hard. It's nurture as well. You got to find it within yourself, because you'll never forgive yourself, so you never get going forward. Like, forgive yourself, get going, be a monster, yeah. Chew it off and go again.
Right. But when you have ideologies that say, or philosophies that say, if you're not a winner, you're a loser. Now, I've mainly encountered that in some cultures more than others, mainly in sport and business. So if you're not a winner, you're a loser. Right. It's a very singular mindset. So how do you, your point, if you're not a winner, you're a learner. And if you're learning, then you're achieving, aren't you? So how do you transition veterans, you work with young athletes, life athletes, military athletes, business athletes. How do you help them get through that kind of mindset challenge?
Well, ultimately, it's choosing your hard, right? Like it's choosing the things that are most difficult and sitting with them and then going, okay, what is the weakest point that I've got? I really think there was too much words there, mate, and it just like blew my head. But but ultimately, I think that if we want to create like a winning of anything, we need to create like a winning mentality that can learn, let go, and go again. Like, we want to win not just the games we're involved with, or the matches we get, or the money we want to win the seconds back. Because I ask you this question. What is the ultimate professional? The professional that values money, that values status, was the ultimate professional is the one that truly respects your time and the time that they have. Because, like, how much for your life? How much for the moments that you can never get back? The most
Right.
important thing that I think I've encountered is that purely respecting the moments that I have, and that the moments that I spend about worrying about being a loser in other people's perceptions is time that I can never get back of learning so fast. So when the next opportunity comes, which not but might not be in the same context of what I've just come from, I
Yeah.
might lose a second connecting with somebody that would change my life's direction so profoundly. It could be a conversation at the airport after a tournament. It could be just anything that could possibly happen. Like it's winning the moments, I think.
Yeah, and I fundamentally agree. So, but then let's move this into being an author. And you mentioned about writing your book, and that's an even lonelier journey. Okay, so like, yeah, we're both similar. You've been in a team performance environment, individual performance environment, but now you've got to write a book. That's even more you and just you. And it's basically you wrestling with your ego every day to get to an outcome.
Yeah, but to me, it's just such a welcoming place because, like, I understand that, like, I am the center of, I'm the fuel, I'm the center of it, and it can never be taken away. And whether people really love what I do or don't love what I do, like, I'm at that point where it's me and the keyboard, and I'm writing these words. And sometimes life gets complicated, and like, while if I can win a word a day, I'm winning. If I can win a sentence structure or think about something in a different way to put it, so it might jolt people's brains in order to think about a particular situation differently, then like I'm kind of winning. I'm doing my job as such, and it's the most empowering, most delightful, greatest place I've ever been in. I love it. Like people might find it like the internalization of it, and it's just all about you. Like I love that responsibility. It makes
So
me
how do
excited, if you can
you,
tell.
yeah, no, I love it, and I respect anyone who has the discipline to sit down and write, let alone write a book, just sit down and have the discipline to write something of quality, where you do have to create the output, then be your own quality assurance manager, then recalibrate what you've written through an objective lens, and then open it up to other eyes to be critiques of what you've written down. That's quite mentally and emotionally, that's quite challenging, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you've got to choose your flow points, right? Like sometimes you have huge creative juices. Like, yeah, I want to be like this, and I want to describe it this way, and I can see this in my head, and it just flows. But then the next day, like you're a little bit tired, and things don't really work that. So what do you do? Like sometimes I rewrite passages that I've written, or like there's like I keep saying, there's always a way forward. It doesn't always have to be highly creative. You just got to keep going.
So when you look out in the world today, I was going to say a former competitor, but as a current competitor, right? Do you look at people like Agatha Christie and John Grisham and go, how do I be like you? Do you look for role models or competing artists that you want to draw down from or knock off their pedestal? What motivates you?
I'm too busy being me. And I'm kind of like holding on to the core reasons while I'm writing Virtutuous. It's not about trying to imitate other people's journeys. It's about discovering wholeheartedly my own and finding a way to tell a particular story that has so much. Like it's very, all these things like flow off the two to us because it's not just a fictional story about this particular character. There's so many parts to this project. It's about mental health, and it's about understanding the difference between modern day value systems and the warrior code. There's like all these different things in it.
So let's explore that a little bit. But tell us about the book and what inspired you to write it.
Well, virtuous means virtuous. Through my own athletic career and through jiu-jitsu, I found people that were super, super virtuous in what they did. They didn't really have like the same value systems that other people had. And I knew that there was a difference, and I wanted to articulate that through the book. And it wasn't about money. Like, I slept on a mattress on the floor, and you know that I put mats down in my room, and I trained jiu-jitsu every single day, and I didn't falter from it. And it got me wondering about why I wasn't really interested in going out and trying to make lots of money.
Yeah.
I was more interested in just turning up and being with some people that I found were kindred spirits.
Yeah.
And this book is about a group of warriors that find kindred spirits along the way. But then I was like, it's all very well said, but we all know that camaraderie is always subjected to a lot of misfortune as well. Well, a lot of things that people have to do in order to survive, and especially in the era that I wrote the book, which is in the Roman auxiliary. So it's set in, you know, 1113 BC.
Yeah.
And it's about a warrior that has this kind of like huge sense of virtue. He's always failing forward as such, but he just mentally gets destroyed. Like, the more that he just keeps going forward, the more things he finds influencing him. And he suffers dramatically from PTSD by the end of the volume. And then he finds the third volume, and he really, really starts to figure out life just before his death. And it's kind of, it's not a hero's journey. So it's not a perfect, he doesn't win much. He just gets hammered.
So your character's more of an anti-hero, is he? Or is he something else?
You so desperately want him to be the hero, and you really like this guy, but he just keeps getting hammered.
So is he ever a winner? Or is he always the learner?
Well, he's a consistent forefighter, and then he does, at the end of the day, he does learn.
Yeah.
He does learn, and he finds his own way of like, this is what life is about.
Yeah. So how do you think, I do like that, and I kind of, because I think in life we often gloss over reality for a lot of people, right?
It's not the American, sorry, it's not the American perfect, you know, he's a beat down athlete, and he comes back and he meets a drunk coach that comes back out of retirement and they go through and they win the championship and he gets the girl and everything's fine. No, it doesn't work that way, because after that, life goes on.
Right.
And like, there's a lot of things that happen. And so I just didn't want to make it that way. I don't believe that that's what life is.
So do you think, if you look at, let's look at American culture, and yeah, I know we're both implants in America, so I tread cautiously around this, but I mean, I think, I've been to your country. I don't know if you visited mine. I've visited a lot of countries, and there is oftentimes is no happy ending. There isn't. There's a lot of people like grinding a grind. And coming back to what I was saying earlier about disengagement in the workforce post-COVID, that snapped back, and there's a lot of people are fed up grinding, which is life for a lot of people. You know, the silver lining or the ideological dream is not within the reach of many, many folks. So with that in mind, do you think, or how do you think your character will resonate with people?
I think just because he's just so genuine,
yeah,
about the things, and he accepts a lot of responsibility for the actions that he takes. He starts out on his own personal journey, trying to find out, he suffers from PTSD. He has to leave his family because, you know, back in that era, there was like no real counselors. It was probably shamans and things like that. But, yep, you know, as a warrior, what do you do to figure yourself out? Like, I know that when I was a young man and I had a lot of problems, you know, the most welcome place that I could be was at training and then getting to the game on Saturday, because it seemed to alleviate all my problems. It just seemed to, for those moments of being in that flow state as such, where all that mattered was catching and passing the ball, making my tackles, scoring a try, trying to win the game, doing the best I could, tackling somebody, feeling that sting on my body, like all those types of things, like being a warrior made everything kind of make sense. And then I could kind of deal with life better. However, I suffered an injury and fractured my skull when I was 21. And I had like about 9 months off to a year off rugby. and any contact whatsoever. And so in that time, it was like this huge thing, like, what do I do? How, who am I? And Virtutuus at the beginning of the book kind of comes to that conclusion. He's just like, man, I'm no good here for anything around me. Like, I've got to go back to what makes me me, who was a warrior. So it's like, I'm signing up for the Roman auxiliary and I'm out of here.
Yeah, so there's a number of issues, subjects conflating here. Let's start with the Romans and the Roman era, because historically we get, and you see on Netflix, you see all these Gucci shows about the Romans and the tribunes and the centurions and their uniforms, but they were a pretty brutal bunch. When you actually read about how their army functioned, but the Romans were brutal. Crucifixion was something they did to their own people. They did to their own soldiers, and they're a brutal bunch. Man. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And Virtutuus encounters this.
Yeah,
and he starts to see things from a different point of view, and eventually leads him to treason. So there's lots of things that his character doesn't. You know, he doesn't agree with a lot of things that go on.
Yeah, which it's interesting there you mentioned treason, because it kind of defines the anti-hero. The anti-hero, right, kind of does the right thing, but not necessarily always does the right thing.
Because we get caught in living kind of like a life or a way of living.
Yeah.
To please other people a lot of the times, rather than making decisions about what's actually right for us. Like, ultimately, in order for things to grow and to evolve just in human nature and human compassion, sometimes we have to step outside our own cultures. We have to step outside the regimes that we're involved in if we think that there's something desperately we need to change. But insecurity is something that stops us from leaving, or comfort stops us from leaving.
Yeah.
And sometimes loyalty stops us from leaving. And so Virtutuus is faced with this, like, you know, and it takes him a while to make a decision, but once he's made the decision, it's done. Because ultimately, he's got a super strong warrior code, because he's a descendant of Sparta as well. So there's something in his gene pool that he refuses just to be submissive.
Yeah. So why did you choose the Roman context rather than, say, a modern American context or a modern European or Ukraine?
Okay, we need to talk about Ukraine sooner or later too. Mate, because I think that in the birth of the Christianity and how that spread through the world comes just after this era. And that's where value systems come in. And when it started talking about every man is equal, and if you should have that, I should have that as well. And it's just kind of like, you know, let's be fair. But in the era that Virtutuus is in, everything is very well structured. Servants are servants, warriors are warriors, politicians are politicians. And kind of the Roman lifestyle was very, very clear cut. You were born into servantry, or you were born into like some kind of political leadership, or, you know. So I wanted to have an era of the book where modern value systems didn't really interfere and was more just about the warrior code, seeing what was right, seeing what was wrong, making choices.
So we've explored, Theo, the context. We've explored a little bit about your own background with sport and jiu-jitsu particularly, and, you know, the overlay of the character and with some of those environments. But you've mentioned a few times the warrior code. So let's talk about that. What is it?
Well, I've taken the warrior code as such, and I've moved it into what I'm calling a virtue system.
Mm-hmm.
So a virtue system is basically without the confinements of the modern day value system. So the modern value systems, I feel, get kind of skewed, because you know how you work, go into high performance units and say, okay, we're going to work out our value systems. Well, let's take a successful captain from one team who's come from one culture of rugby, and then put them in a group of other people that have a different culture. And all of a sudden, all these cultures collide.
Yeah.
And even though we talk about value systems, our brain kind of goes towards, where did I have success in that value system? And so what I'm trying to do is go, well, if we work on the virtue system and leave everything else that we've had behind and just work on exactly what we have in this present moment. How could you be as honest as possible? And how would you use your courage and your bravery in order to do, in order to express what you're thinking and feeling without anybody in the room persecuting you for what you think? Because having that kind of openness leads us to everybody, so this is what we all think about this particular thing, this particular culture of a program or this particular team. And then by having, and when I talk about warrior code, it's like breeding warriors that are open enough to be able to hear what's being said, but also to be able to say and talk about perhaps their weaknesses or what they perceive as their strength. And then perhaps discovering that there could be a weakness.
In this pursuit today of diversity and inclusion, how can a diverse group all be able to articulate what they're feeling and thinking without adversity to create a common cause?
Yeah, and you think about as soon as pressure is applied to any kind of individual, then what normally comes out? I found that when I went to jiu-jitsu, all of the pressures that I faced would always bring out a part of me that I was like, why did I just react like that? Like, what was I thinking? What was I doing?
Yeah.
I was resorting back to my default as a kid, growing up in a family, growing up in a community, growing up in a particular culture. This is where value systems come from. They stem, I feel it kind of like pulls a cord and makes you kind of think about, this is where I am from. And it's okay to be, this is where I'm from. But think about where you are right now and what's best for this particular project or this particular team.
I empathize with the challenge because I've walked it in some cases, like your main character. I've been a bit dysfunctional, but equally when an organization or team has clashed with my value sets, and you mentioned something interesting earlier, in the case of your character, right, the clash of value sets leads him to treason. Now, we might not necessarily have to be that extreme in the modern world, but, you know, the clash of value sets leads me to a juncture. Do I walk away from my employer, for example? And how do I walk away? And because to me, you've got my heart ticking over is that kind of warrior code. And we can have male and female warriors, you know, can't we? It's not just a male concept. So there's a two-pronged question. Number one, right, how do we apply that? Right, he's had to, you know, had that that juncture where it's forced him down a treasonous path. And in our modern world, it might force us into a space where we're having to walk away from our employer.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I think because a lot of people get and having a warrior code too is almost having a sense of discretion about when to make the right decision.
Yeah.
Because we have to think about, we've got to choose our hard. And I've said this before. Sometimes it could be a knee-jerk reaction of, this is toxic for me and I don't want to put up with this anymore. It's done. Or you have the, you know, probably the more reserved way of making decisions is like, I'm done, but I'm not ready to make that decision right now because it's going to make me very, very vulnerable to the world around me. And so there's always different ways. And the warrior mindset is to try to have an architectural position of the problem.
An architectural position of the problem.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, we can be caught up in the architecture of our problems and we can be the things that are falling down all around us. So we can get up above it and then we can go, the situation is a little bit dodgy for me right now. If I make this move and this move, these things are going to happen to me. So yeah. How about I'll just wait and I'll tolerate this. Because, you know, to tolerate and have resistance and resilience and all this kind of thing, like it's just about making the right decision at the right time.
Essentially, I mean, when you say warrior code, you've obviously got a Roman here. I think about samurai.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Yep.
In the modern world, it could be one of our uniformed troops who've been out in the Middle East or, you know, Afghanistan or places like that, you know, true warriors. And so are you articulating the warrior code as an essence of being rather than the essentials of combat?
It stems from the essentials of combat, because I think that at the end of the day, when I was doing jiu-jitsu, some guys could have like smashed me. Like, they could have choked me out. They could have broken my arm. They could have done so much to me.
Yeah.
And I've been in positions where I could have done that to other people too. And there's this discretion of like, no, man, as a person, like, I want to look after you. And it's not about my ego. It's about doing the right thing for this. Knowing that you could really, really, really hurt somebody, but you choose to see them as a brother and find empathy and care for them. And ultimately, honesty and discretion and humility and empathy towards what someone's going through.
And it's integrity, like the ultimate. I think integrity drops in there as well.
Yeah, man, it's huge. And rectitude, right? Doing the right thing regardless of the consequence. So yeah. Sometimes he's been, you know, I've been training with guys and instead of me really trying to like get out of a position, and I know that I could hurt them if I got out of it, because I could see them being vulnerable, is like accepting the fact, just let them take it. Like, okay, take my arm because you could have really got hurt then. Like, it's doing the right thing regardless of the consequences. You took my arm, sweet, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
We're just going to get on and we're going to compliment each other again and we're going to go again. Yeah. So I think the warrior code, like I find myself surrounded by people that are, you know, special operations and black belts from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and world-class professional athletes.
Yeah.
These are the people that I have the most contact with. There's something about them. There's an honoring of that full-on warrior spirit.
Yeah, let's flip that over then into the ugly stuff for a couple of minutes here. You know, these warriors that we know today, you know, some of them are out in other parts of the world and they have to kill people or they have to be alongside people who are killed. We don't really speak to that, do we? We don't in society. How do we help those people or generate empathy for what they're going through, even if they're aware that they're going through it?
That is the biggest question that I've been asking myself, and the reason that Virtutos is so important, because it's getting people to understand that there's a different, people go through these like really, really heavy things. We can't solve all the problems that people go through. We can't solve all of the hurt that they feel. Like it's always about a process and it's always about timing. Sometimes we can't say the right things, but every now and then somebody will say something or do something that trickles into somebody's mind of, I actually belong and I can actually find purpose. Some of the best conversations I've had have been without words. It's like a friend of mine was going through some pretty heavy stuff, man, and we sat on the phone for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And of that 3 hours, we probably talked for like 15 minutes, because it's not always about providing solutions for people that have these things that go on. And he could really reconcile. Like he knew, like he was a professional soldier and he did some pretty, pretty
grim,
full on things. And like that was his profession. And a lot of it he can handle. And a lot of it is okay. But every now and then something hurts you or hits you personally, right? And that's, I think, the biggest hurdle is, how do we handle something that draws the line that goes from a professional soldier and then it floats into, this is really personally getting to me, getting to my heartstrings, getting to my soul.
Yeah. But I think we live in sanitized societies that don't allow us to solve problems anyway, let alone embrace something that someone else might be walking through. But you got me thinking there, you just mentioned something about the warriors I know, male and female, they're all quite spiritual, actually. Do you think there's an essence of spirituality in the warrior code?
I think that there has to be. I think that it's important to understand, like, at the end of the day, we're just specks in this huge, huge universe. And whatever it's governed by, whatever we're going to become, we're just like energy that's going to get dispersed back into this big, bad universe. Yeah. And you have to have some kind of acceptance of that. Our body is decaying and dying on us and is heading towards death. But our brain seems to trick ourselves to think that we can live forever. or we want to do something that gives us eternity so that we never really die. Writing a book, for example.
Yeah. No, no. You know? Is this like a legacy piece for you, or is this the start of a journey into being an author?
This is a start into a bigger project to bring awareness to help people through navigating the complexity of life. Like there's actually a manual that goes with the tutors.
So very interesting.
Yeah, and so every paragraph is kind of every chapter is broken down and saying this is what's behind the chapter. There's a part the tutors has to go down to a hole, like a deep hole where they throw people that have committed treason, deserters. Yeah. And he's got to go down there, and his mate's down there, and he's got to go down there with him. So he crawls down the hole and he has to do some business.
I'm assuming when you say there's like with each chapter, there's like a manual that explains certain aspects. Are those relative to like modern life? Can you give us an example of something from one of those chapters?
Absolutely. If you've ever dealt with people that have suffered from depression or PTSD.
Yeah.
And they're in a big deep hole. Sometimes they don't want a clinical analysis of why they're there. Sometimes they just want someone to crawl down that hole and just hang out and be there. Yeah, and also in this particular occasion, it's the worst case scenario. So Virtutus crawls down this hole and his mate can't come back. It's basically Virtutus has caused a series of events that he's there. And then he has to make a decision. I can't get you out. If you stay down this hole, you're going to die a slow death.
Why did you choose to write a trilogy as your first outing as an author?
Because I wanted to build so much into it. Like, I didn't want it to be just a quick story over and out, because it's the hero's journey, unfortunately.
Right.
And there is just like so much to say. And so much to discover in my own personal journey that I didn't want to write everything that I think right now. I wanted to leave space for me to grow as a person through this journey.
Yeah, cool. So when are you going to publish?
It's at the formatters now, and it's going to be out it's going to be on Amazon in probably 3 days. It takes 72 to 48, 72 hours to upload onto Amazon to be available. So here in 7 days.
So you're self-publishing via Amazon, are you?
Yeah.
How have you navigated? How did you make your choice to self-publish?
Because I'm focusing on the long game. I'm not focusing on just trying to turn over books for me personally, or trying to turn it over for money. I'm just turning it over because I want to embark on a personal journey that gives me a lot of freedom. If you think you got something good to say and you really believe in what you do, like, back yourself. That's what I think. Like, I'm just backing myself. Like, I believe that Virtutus, the whole entire project, is something that people could find belonging and could resonate with within them. Like, I think it's something that they could to learn from, purpose and belonging, getting people to see that.
So looking at it in project management, you've got two projects. You've got the writing project and the publishing project.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you look at the effort you have to put into one then the other, how would you articulate that?
I'm going really organically. I'm going one step at a time. So yeah. I'm not trying to complicate things on the publishing side of it. I'm trying to keep it like super, super simple. Like, okay, I'll finish formatting. What's next? And I just research. Like, I just go on Amazon. What makes the best selling books? A good cover, catchy blurb, blah, 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 blah. I just follow the rules, man. Don't stop. Keep going.
Well, I'd love to hear. I know it's great that you're going out within 3 days. You'll be out. Within 3 days, you'll be a published author. How does that feel?
I've been living that since I started 3 years ago.
Right.
So, like, I've always imagined myself doing that.
So you must have some sense of achievement, excitement. There must be something. And you're quite a deep character. There must be something going on in there.
Yeah, I think it's like an incremental confidence booster that, like, I can achieve this. Yeah, And the yeah, I just yeah, just looking back and going, okay, I've climbed this mountain, and then I'm standing on that, looking at one that's, twice as high because there's two other volumes to come out with it. So, and so there's an audiobook, there's a graphic novel, there's all these different things going on with the Virtuous. So there's the manuals, like it's just huge.
For
It
sure.
might take me the rest of my life, and that'll be great.
Who did you have to pull in? Did you have to pull in family and friends to like proofread it and edit for you?
Oh yeah. Like I've got people that are like been combing through things for me and sending it back to me, and
Yeah.
countless like different editors, development editors, and Virtutuis has shaped and changed so much from the people that I've met. I couldn't write to save myself, mate. I decided to do this 3 years ago, and a mate's friend of mine was a writer. She said, "Oh, well, I'll help you." And she goes, "Oh, you've got a lot of work to do." And she was actually doing courses in writing. She put me through three courses in 1 weekend. And I was just like, I was using the FAST principle: forget, be attentive, be in a steady state, and then
Yeah.
try to teach myself over and over again, like write it and be critical about what I was doing. Like I've taught myself through the professionals that I met how to write. Every editor, I go back and I fine comb everything, like do it, do it, do it, learn it. Like, don't be afraid to learn, just keep going.
It's a tough gig writing. I wish you the best of luck because I actually enjoy sitting and crafting an essay. But I do these days with language and cultural reflections. I love sitting there observing the world and crafting a good message, but you've taken it into a book. So, and that's an awesome achievement, something to be proud of. You're publishing as Theo Bennett, is that right?
Yep, as Theo Bennett. And
Yeah.
can I just mention something? Like I've got a
Yeah, of
specific goal.
course.
I want to sell 1 million copies. I want to sell 1 million copies, and I'm going to put $1 of every copy to help the people of Ukraine. So whether that goes into help, buying bullets if they need it, buying clothes because it's coming in the winter, or whatever,
Yeah.
I don't care. So I just really want to, like 300 people a day are still getting killed in the Ukraine, and we don't hear anything about it.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna do my silent project. I'm just gonna push it as hard as I can, and that's the goal. It's kind of like one of those personal things. Like I'm not gonna. This is my way to help.
I love that you're writing as a point of view of reflection on society. And I love that you've gone down the kind of the we path.
We can be resolved people of the experiences that we've had, but we don't necessarily know it all. Like.
Okay, so let's close now with you, the author Theo Bennett, giving us a read of part of your book, Virtutis, and to leave our audience with a taste of what it's all about.
Virtutuis sat by the riverbank where his wife's body rested beneath the hard clay and rock. He longed for her connection more than ever. The more he tried, the more his longing washed away downstream. Forgive me, my love. His eyes closed. He remembered their first embrace by the rushing water and their passionate love that had grown their family. He searched for peace but found none. The hero in his arms stood on alert. The power of the black wolf's jaws lurked freshly in his mind, how its teeth pinched through the flesh in a vice-like grip that had ensnared him. He shook his head, shaking away the threat, trying to regain a firm presence, searching for a better solution. Virtutuis hoped she wouldn't judge him for his actions. The thought of letting her down sunk his head forward. The boys were her pride, her joy. Not wanting to disrespect her memory, he fought a battle within himself until the dawn, trying to honor her. But the last images of her life were too vivid to erase.
Love it. He's a deep character. There's a lot going on in there, isn't there?
Is, mate.
Theo, thanks for sharing your journey and giving us a little insight into your new book. I wish you the very best of luck. Before we go, what last pearls of wisdom would you love to leave with our listeners?
There's a segment in the book, and Virtutuis talks about the greatest virtue of all. It's the virtue of love. And instead of love being fixed, he describes it as love is what floats between all the virtues and holds them steadfast.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much for this. And we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah, mate. Thanks so much. I appreciate you. Thank you.